Blog Talk Radio.
Charlie Sheen appears at the Chicago Theater tonight, but
If last night is any indication, fans are in for a disappointing time. Some of the paying patrons in the Motor City booed repeatedly, and many left early. ABC 7 Sarah Schulte here now with more on the Charlie Sheen Show just across the street, Sarah.
Well, Ruffy, the Detroit show and the one that starts in about 3 hours, as you mentioned, across the street, sold out in minutes. Some fans bought tickets because they really are fans of Charlie Sheen. Others say they like watching a train wreck. But as people left Sheen's first show last night, they said the train wreck lasted too long and it was tough to watch.
A standing ovation for Charlie Sheen as the actor began his Detroit show. But after a monologue and a video, the love for Sheen quickly dried up. Many in the audience were getting bored with his usual Sheenisms.
He mentioned Morlock and Tiger Blood winning. That's about it. His three catchphrases. It was nothing like we expected it to be. It was really boring.
Boring turned into booze as Sheen sat on stage wearing a Detroit Tigers jersey with the word Warlock on the back. The 45-year-old couldn't hear himself talk over the loud roar of booing fans.
You know, honestly, I felt really bad for him. The fans are awful.
Many fans left early.
Charlie Sheen, thinking he was the president of Warlock, babbling on until I wanted to throw up in my seat.
Terrible. I've been around for an hour, didn't get to see nothing, and he comes out, and I could have watched this on TV.
All right. Now
why would I spend that much money to watch him in person when
how
he does something? Me?
Well,
I brought it online. I paid $300 to be here.
I texted my husband and said, grab her coat and we'll meet you at the front door. It was not entertaining, and I like him.
She left the stage for about 70 minutes while a rapper entertained, and for the few that stuck around, Sheen came back on stage to shake hands. Many Detroit fans have a message for Chicago fans.
Hey, Chicago, don't waste your money.
After last night's bad reviews, ticket brokers say several people were trying to unload their tickets today. And when the tickets first went on sale, brokers said $100 face value tickets were going as high as $300. And while he was getting booed, Charlie Sheen is quoted as saying to a fan, "Sorry, dude, already got your money."
Winning.
Merci de nous rappeler.
We're on the network.
Broadcasting live from the Bay to Bombay, back to the DK and down to LA. It's Mega Show with your host,
Vince in the Bay.
We're on the network.
Vince in the Bay.
We're on the network.
It's Vince in the Bay. Apologize for getting a late start here. I was hustling to the studio and just got in the door, but I'm here and I'm happy to announce I have a special guest tonight. Tonight I will be joined by Kate Brindle. She is a comedian based in Michigan, and She will be joining me here momentarily. She's a comedian who has performed across the country, all over North America, and maybe north of. Oh no, she's performed in Canada, so she's performed north of America too. Over the years, Kate has opened for comedians such as Dave Attell, Kevin Nealand, and Kevin Pollak. She's originally from Dexter, Michigan, and moved to New York City to do stand-up and study acting at NYU. Since then, she's been entertaining audiences at venues across the nation, such as Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle, Junior's Last Laugh, Dr. Jin's Comedy Club, and every bowling alley, basement, and dive bar in between. Whether Kate's making simple observations of everyday life or talking about dating or her wannabe gangbanger brother or her stripper father, she continues to charm crowds with her sassy brand of humor. And offstage, Kate is an avid animal rights activist and has an extremely unhealthy obsession with everything New Kids on the Block. And she's currently performing at venues all across the country. She's going to have some dates out here on the West Coast coming up later this month, and I'll relay all those dates to you a little bit later. But I want to welcome her to the program now, and I think this is her. Kate, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. Sound fantastic. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Super duper. thanks for coming on the program. I appreciate it. So do you want to tell us real quick a little bit about yourself and what you're up to these days?
Sure. I started doing stand-up comedy. I originally went to acting school, but I realized I couldn't stand the rejection of auditioning. So I decided to transition to the rejection of stand-up comedy when people don't laugh, you know, and taking that chance. But so I've been doing stand-up for like 6 or 7 years now. And, I quit my day job about a year ago just to do stand-up full-time. So I've been on the road ever since then. And that's what
awesome.
I do now, just kind of traveling around, telling jokes to wherever they'll have me.
Right on. Where are you? Did you perform tonight, actually?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was actually I was at a place called Maxie's in Flint, Michigan, which is it's one of the longest going one-nighters in Michigan. Actually, it's been going on for like 20 years. So believe it or not,
what does that mean? What's a one-nighter? What does that mean?
Oh, it's basically like a bar or a restaurant that'll do comedy that's not a regular comedy club, but like one night out of the week they'll have a comedy
show.
Yeah, so that's, you know, sometimes like
I'm not a comedian, sister. I don't know all the lingo, so I might have to pull you aside for side notes.
Yeah, I'd be happy to share the lingo. I don't know that much lingo, a little bit, but so we did a show, and because Michigan's number one in unemployment, not very many people have jobs to go to on Monday, so they really packed the place on Sunday, which was nice. It was a nice full crowd, and it was a pretty fun show.
That's awesome. So you've been doing this for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really kind of my show. I've up until now has been mostly just a call-in show. I've been having musical guests, and I want to try to get in guests of all different types, and I've been playing comedy, stand-up comedy, just like little sound bites here and there on my show, and been wanting to get some comedians on, and you're my first comedian that I've had to interview, so I'm going to hit you with a lot of questions just about comedy in general, just because I'm not really that up on it. I don't know. I know there's a lot of sort of unwritten rules, and obviously there's all kinds of insider lingo and stuff, but since you've been doing a stage act for 6 years, how much over that period of 6 years, how much total material have you accumulated as far as like bits and whatnot over that time period?
You know, I typically perform for like half an hour. I probably have more material than that, but I feel like when you start, you have a lot of jokes that you're like, yeah, these are pretty funny, you know, and I've got all this material. And then as you keep doing it for a while, you write better material, and you realize that you probably had no business even saying some of those jokes on stage when you first started. So, I mean, I've probably written a lot more than that, but actually, like, usable material that I'm proud of, I would say, like, half an hour. There's definitely things I've retired that I probably shouldn't mm-hmm. have ever said on stage anyway in the first place. But, yeah, I'm still kind of at the, you know, like, the opening act sort of position right now. I mean, ideally, you know, I'd like to be a headliner someday, but right now I'm just kind of having fun. It's pretty low pressure to not be the headliner, you know, when you're
I bet.
Yeah, so it's kind of nice. You still get to travel, you still get to make people laugh, but without a lot of the pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine that there's a lot of, is there a lot of competition between comedians, because I've had my few exposures, my little limited exposure to stand-up comedy is pretty much, I've been to maybe a handful of stand-up comedy shows, and the ones that I have seen, like I've been to like the open mic night on Sunday night, they have a comedy showcase at a club here, and it's just, and it seems like there's, you know, like 30 or some odd comics that go up throughout the night, but in addition to that, there's like 30 or 40 more that just sit in the back of the bar and don't do anything except just sit there and like wait their turn. And somehow, I guess, like they magically, eventually, if they come to enough open mics and sit in the back and schmooze with enough people at the end, somehow they magically appear on stage. Was that your experience? Was there some sort of pecking order that you had to go through before you actually were able to get gigs and get out there?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I feel like it's a little bit different on the coasts, like in New York and LA. I feel like there, you know, it is more competitive out there. But yeah, there's definitely, that's kind of how I started, was just doing open mic. And that's how a lot of people start. And you just go to open mic after open mic. Like, luckily in the Midwest, they give you free drinks when you perform at open mic. So that makes it, you know, a little bit better. You're not getting paid, but you're kind of getting paid in beer.
But it probably improves your performance, too, I would imagine.
Exactly. Or at least you don't feel so bad about it if you bomb, you know, if you're up there bombed yourself. But, yeah, so I just did that for a while. And then a lot of it is, you know, you can go audition with a certain booker, or you just kind of get noticed after a while. That's how it happens a lot, I think. Like, there'll be a headliner or a comic who's actually getting paid to do it who needs an opener. And then all of a sudden, you know, they'll ask you, okay, well, what are you doing this week? And can you come with me? And so I feel like it's kind of a combination of, you know, just putting in the time, getting seen, having bookers and club owners see you, but then also meeting other comics who help you out. Because that's what really helped me, too, was just, you know, making friends with other comics and having them bring me on the road. And, you know, I've been really fortunate with that.
Is it tough being the female comic out on the road, just trying to being the up-and-coming comic? Because I, from what I understand, most struggling up-and-coming comics, when they're starting off, it's just them on the road by themselves. And I would imagine it might be a little intimidating maybe for a female to be off on the road all the time by herself. Is that ever weird or awkward or present some interesting scenarios?
It can be. Yeah, I think that, you know, when you're traveling alone by yourself, there's different things, you know, like if I'm driving around at 3 a.m. after a show, I probably don't want to go to a truck stop, you know, to go to the bathroom by myself. So there's like that aspect of it. There's also kind of the aspect of it of like creepy people finding you on Facebook and showing up at shows, which has happened not a ton, but occasionally. It happens. I think it happens to male comics, too, but I feel like the creepy people, like the creepy dudes, might just be a little more persistent with women mm-hmm. comedians, you know?
Yeah, we like to think of we like to call ourselves creepers.
Yes, I'm sure they...
At least that's
really
what I found out, that since I've been doing this show, I get a lot of... I mean, I'm sure, you know, in the comic industry, obviously, you have hecklers. Mm-hmm. Instead of hecklers, we have trolls. that call us on this, call us and just, you know, prank call us or whatever. And so I have to deal with that. And it's sometimes it can be very, very trying,
mm-hmm.
but you know, it's a lot easier for me to take on people that are, you know, being a man than, you know, if I was a woman, I think it might, I don't know, it might be rougher, but whatever, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it can be challenging. Plus, I mean, if they call you, can you just hang up on them, or do you have to be nice?
Oh, yeah, I usually humor them. I try to basically troll them right back.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's why they don't call me as much as they used to, because, you know, I'm not any fun. I'm not a challenge because, you know, I sort of troll them back.
Right, right.
Which is what I'm sure what you try to do as a comic when you get heckled. I mean, what recourse do you usually have when you get heckled?
You know, I feel like people go easier on me because I'm a woman sometimes, because I think that if a lot of times I've noticed this a little bit, if there's a drunk guy who wants to heckle another guy, it's kind of because they're both men. Whereas if they heckle me, I feel like they're just going to look mean, and the woman they're with is not going to be real thrilled with them, you know. So I feel like they kind of go easy on me, which is nice. I should knock on some wood here, but I feel like people just kind of contribute to the show, or they just kind of, you know, I'll tell a joke, and they're like, oh, yeah, my dad does that, or oh, I have a friend like that. So I don't think they think they're really heckling. They think they're just kind of contributing, and sometimes
mm-hmm.
I feel like when people want to do that, they just want to be acknowledged, you know, like they're a part of it. And, you know, so sometimes, like this weekend I was doing a couple shows, and there was this guy who was just really drunk, and every punchline I would do, he would just scream. I mean, half the time he was just like, whoa, you know, he hold up his beer, mm-hmm. and it's like, okay, clearly this person just wants to be acknowledged. So, you know, I just chatted with him and asked him his name, where he was from, stuff like that. And then usually they tend to kind of go away or kind of pipe down a little bit after that. So, you know, I've been pretty fortunate in that I've never had any, like, really mean hecklers. It's more just drunk people who don't know you're not supposed to yell out things in the middle of a show.
Right on. I'm with Kate Brindle. She's a comedian, and she is with me for the evening. She's my guest here on Mega Show. It's Sunday night. If you want to join me, I'm going to chop it up with her for a little bit more here. We're going to take a little break and come back and talk to her about some other stuff, including her obsession with New Kids on the Block, which I will make sure to highlight extensively throughout the program. And yes, we'll take calls if you have anything you want to ask or our guest tonight, Kate Brindle. Feel free to do so. The number 347-826-7667. I'll be right back.
All right. Michigan. It was a big year for us in Michigan. Detroit voted the city with the highest amount of crime in the entire United States. So, woo! Yeah. Clap it up for homicide. That's right. But it's kind of sad because they're always playing all these ads to try to entice out-of-towners to move to Detroit. And one of the reasons that they gave was that our downtown ice rink is bigger than the one in Rockefeller Center in New York City. Ooh. Like, that doesn't make you guys want to pack up your shit and move. I don't know what does. Sure, we have no jobs, the weather sucks, and, well, you might get stabbed in the face. But, damn it, you can skate.
It's Mega Show with your host, Vince in the Bay.
Vince, you stupid San Francisco 1978 Abercrombie bitch loving, nipple plant loving, butt plug up the ass looking, hot dog licking, dog humping, squirrel fisting bastard.
And now, back to Mega Show.
Love everybody if you want to take a chance.
Yeah, they're rough. It's Vince in the Bay back here with Kate Brindle. I forgot. I was doing all my my pre-production today, and I was catching up on some NKOTB. And I forgot, man. They had some jams. There were some jams. I didn't even realize that they were theirs.
Yeah, were you dancing a little bit in your office?
No. I was tapping my foot, though.
Oh, okay.
And you know what? Also, doing my research, I found out that the New Kids on the Block collaborated with Lady Gaga a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, she actually opened for them before she was famous in 2008.
She wasn't always famous?
No, I know. Can you believe that? Because I remember when I went to go
Possible.
See them, I was like,
I thought she was born that way.
Nice. Yeah, she. I saw her before she was famous.
That's awesome.
In Detroit. So yeah. So the New Kids, really. I mean, I think everyone owes so much to the New Kids. Lady Gaga.
Why?
Her career.
Why does Lady Gaga own? I think she owns more to Madonna than New Kids on the Block.
That's true.
You mean for letting her open on their tour? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Well, and I just think they're responsible for so much greatness in the world anyway. So any excuse I have to, give them some credit for something I do. But, yeah, no, I agree with you. She does probably owe Madonna a lot, too.
Although she said that new song that she came out with, she envisioned Whitney Houston singing it.
Really?
Yeah, when she was at the Grammys, she accepted her award, and she's like, yeah, you know that song I just did? I wrote it with Whitney's voice. In fact, she was talking straight to Whitney. She was like, Whitney, I envisioned you singing it.
And what did Whitney say?
Lady who? What? I don't care what lady's saying. You know, who knows?
She's like, girl, I don't need you. I have my own career.
Yeah. Whatever. So who's your favorite New Kid on the Block?
My favorite is Joey. And it's I've been a fan since like 1989, and it's always been Joey.
I hope so. I was hoping that. I hope it wasn't like a new phenomenon for you to use.
No, I discovered them when I was 9 years old, and I've been in love ever since. So, yeah, he's been my favorite the whole time. I've met him a few times. He's really nice in person. Or at least he seems that way. He was nice to me.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I'm pretty excited. They're touring with Backstreet Boys this summer. So.
Dude, I saw that. That's going to be an interesting crowd. I'd go to that just to watch the people file into that place.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's a great place for, like, single straight guys to go. I mean, there are so many
really?
Women.
Should I go?
You should go. I think you should go, and I think you should dress.
Because I'm
as
on the prowl,
band.
Sister. I'm ready. And if that's what I have to do, if I have to go to a New Kids concert, I'll do what I have to do. It doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, because I went on their cruise, the New Kids on the Block, they actually have a cruise, and I went on that.
Oh, my God.
I know. It's kind of pathetic. But
do they have like a – they must have fanatic like fan clubs and all that, right? Are you dialed into all that?
A little bit. It was – you know what was weird was that these women on this cruise – because I thought I was this crazy fan, you know, and I followed them around a little bit to different venues. I went on this cruise.
I've been following you on Twitter for a couple of years, and there was a time there where I thought you were opening up for them. You were tweeting about sneaking them like every single night.
I can only dream. That would be amazing if I could do that. They probably wouldn't let me because I'd probably be too crazy, and I'd be like, you know, storming into their dressing rooms all the time. But yeah, there's some crazy people out there, even worse than I am. But yeah, I would recommend you go because there were these two guys on the cruise, and they dressed just like the New Kids, and women were all over them. Because, I mean, there's only five New Kids, so not everyone can sleep with a New Kid. But, you know, a lot of people could probably sleep with someone who looks like them. So that's my recommendation for the single guys out there.
All right. And I have a single guy with me on the line now, and he's got his hand raised. He is a regular on the show, and his name is the One Angry Jew. And One Angry Jew, what it do? You're on with Kate Brindle.
You know, I'm completely awestruck listening to this interview. This is such an elevation for your show. But I have to end my fantasy, Kate. I looked at your blog, and I fear the worst.
Yeah.
Please
What's
tell me
worst,
you're not a lesbian. Please tell me you're not a lesbian.
I am. No, I have a boyfriend, actually.
All right, that's good. Then my fantasy can resume. All right, that's good.
All right. Very well, then.
This is a good-looking woman who's funny. Where do you find that? Because, what? Most people, you can't even find good-looking women who are funny.
Yeah, and on top of that, not only is she funny and good-looking, she's also an animal rights activist. And no offense to animal rights activists. I'm all for, you know, saving the animals and, you know, all that good stuff. Try not to eat too many of them. But usually your stereotype of any act, I was saying this on my program the other day, it doesn't matter what kind of activist. Usually activists just in general tend to be very dry and bland and boring and one-dimensional. And I ran into Kate a couple of years ago, and she totally shattered that image and gave me hope that that activism, no matter what it is for, can incorporate humor or people that are humorous. Kate, have you tried to incorporate your humor into, or I'm sorry, your activism into your humor, the reverse?
A little bit. I mean, I do think that's so important, like you say, because, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of injustice and a lot of bad things in the world, and I think it's important to be able to laugh at the end of the day, you know, just to lighten things up. I do a little bit. I talk about, well, I have a joke about, like, vegan bondage gear. That's not really like, kind of animal rights, I guess, a little bit. But I don't talk about it too much. I mostly, I would say, do like more observational stuff. And I talk about drinking a whole heck of a lot. But
yeah.
I would like to incorporate activism more into my act. But right now, it's probably subtle, you know.
Yeah, you know, and usually anything, any political or social commentary, if it's overt in any art,
mm-hmm.
it's you're usually balancing on a very thin line, and I think it's usually best for most people to just avoid it altogether. Because once you start touching on politics and religion and stuff like that, it better be really funny and be able to connect with a lot of people, or else I think you could end up with a lot of egg on your face. That's just my observation looking from the outside.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's really hard to be funny if you're doing that type of material without coming off as preachy. You know, I think
exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm kind of an activist during the day, and then I talk about silly things at night, you know, to kind of get some stress relief and stuff like that.
Yeah. You provide a valuable service And I'm really awestruck by, I think the first type of artist I'm usually awestruck by are musicians. And then second would probably be comedians. And I think the thing that I really admire about comedians, even more so than musicians, is you don't need to bring any bags with you. You can bring, all you need is you. You just show up, right?
Right, and that's one of the reasons, well, because I would, honestly, if I could do music, I would be a musician in a heartbeat. And I think that's one of the reasons I am a comic, is because I can't do music, because I'm terrible. But, yeah, it is kind of nice to just show up and grab the mic and, not have to have a roadie or something like that lugging all your equipment in. So, yeah, I mean, there's some comics, they have guitars and they use props, but...
All you need is yourself, more or less, and you can get away with just whatever you can carry. Like a musician can just carry a guitar, and they can just post up and play on a street corner if they want. And I think that's great. I got into filmmaking and that stuff, and it's so tedious and time consuming and drawn out, and you don't get a direct direct reaction from your audience, and usually there's such a gap between your initial concept and the actual completion and delivery to the consumer, whoever, the audience. And by the time it gets to the audience, you probably don't even care about it. You've seen the goddamn movie so many times, or video or whatever, so many times in editing, that it's just white noise to you. And I think it's great that you and musicians have, what you guys have is like an immediate response and connection with your audience, and I'm definitely envious of that. I think that's part of the reason why I started developing this radio show, is because it's more of a direct connection with an audience, too.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's definitely something about it, and there's also, I think there's a sense of satisfaction to knowing how you're doing right when you're doing it, because I was a theater major. And so I was used to doing live audiences, but I feel like when I would do plays, the audience would be polite and they would just kind of sit there and listen, whereas with comedy, if you're doing well or you're not, I mean, instantly, and I think that that's really gratifying, just to hear that laughter instantly. Of course, on the flip side, if you're not doing well, it's, terrifying,
yeah,
and awful. You just hear a silence, but yeah, that there definitely is something to that connection,
Yeah, and the audience can turn on you really quick too. I went to a comedy show at this place called the Purple Onion. I don't know if you ever heard of it in San Francisco. It's supposed to be kind of like old school and legendary.
I thought that was a strip club.
Was it a strip club originally? Probably. It's probably. I wouldn't be surprised if like Lenny
Bruce.
There's
a Purple Onion in almost every town.
Yeah. Yeah, the Purple Onion here in North Beach. I went down there a couple of weeks ago to see this comedian, Nagayo Bloom. You ever heard of him?
No. Is he California?
Yeah, he's from California. He's based in Sacramento. He does cannabis humor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got his own magazine, and so he was headlining there. And it was like your typical thing, kind of like you described. There was like an MC, the guy that, I guess they have a comic that typically just sort of hosts the night. And then there was a couple of openers, and then there's the headliner, Nagayo, who was great. He was like on the money. But then the openers were really interesting to me, though, because some of these guys, you could tell they were seasoned and they had a routine, and they looked comfortable up there and were sort of in their element. But then there was this one kid who was like, you could tell he was a newbie. He even made sure everybody knew he was a newbie. And he was just kind of like bouncing off the walls, and he was just all full of like nervous energy. And his girlfriend was in the first row, and he had just really, really, really bad toilet humor, like just really poor taste, like not even like funny, just mm-hmm. really just horrible. And everybody was just ragging on this guy, and he was just and then finally he finished his set, and then of course throughout the whole night, each comic that came up would have like a little stab at this poor kid who just sat there and just took it the whole night. And I was just like, wow, this is kind of like the ruthless naked underbelly of the comic industry.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely times that you know, I feel like when I watched other comics bomb, the people that are laughing the hardest are the comics in the back of the room, the other comics, because they're just so glad it's not them, you know?
Yeah. Like, oh, I mean, yeah.
Even my friends I've seen, I mean, because sometimes, you know, like I did some gigs in Florida a couple months ago, and, you know, Friday, it was at the same club, it was a club in Orlando, Friday the show was amazing. Saturday, it was just terrible. Like, the crowd was just, I don't know. It was like you would try to talk to them, engage them. They just weren't having it. And it was the same venue. And, you know, sometimes there's no explanation for it. And, you know, and I was working with a good friend of mine, and I was just laughing at him the entire time because he was struggling so much, and he was doing the same thing to me. And it really is. I think it's like, you know, when you see someone fall down, you're just so glad it's not you. You know, and
there's a name
like
for that. It's Schadenfreude, isn't that the word?
Yes. Yeah.
Schadenfreude. Oh man, yeah. That was the two things that were actually entertaining from that night that I saw, or that stood out for me, was the guy that totally was an epic fail, and it was like comedy. It was just entertainment seeing him just flop. And then it was also equally as entertaining to see the guy, the headliner, who was like a seasoned pro. He was hilarious, and you know, I forgot. That's the thing is when I know when I've seen a good movie or listened to, or enjoyed a good concert or enjoyed a good performance of anything, when I forget about, you know, all of my surroundings and I'm just find myself engrossed in the story or whatever or the music and I'm not paying, because I usually start off everything, a movie, a concert, watching a stand-up guy. I paid attention to sort of the surroundings and the bells and whistles and what people are adjusting and doing. And, you know, I pay attention, like if I'm watching a movie, I'm paying attention to the cinematography and the soundtrack. But all that kind of drifts away, and I get usually get swept away by the artist if there's like some substance there that makes me forget that I'm listening to a comic or watching a movie or listening to a concert.
Mm-hmm. That same thing happens to me. Of course, I mean, I always say this, too, that if I see a comic who I really like and someone asks me to tell them one of their jokes, I can't even remember because I enjoyed all of their jokes so much and I just remember laughing so much. Whereas if there's someone I don't like, you know, quite as much, you know, like I'm not blown away by them, I usually remember like one or two funny things that they said, you know. But if someone's really, really good, I think I'm so in the moment and enjoying myself and what they're doing so much that... yeah, it is hard to pick it apart in pieces.
Right on.
Let me ask you a question, if I may.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Where do you find your gigs?
Where do I find them?
How do you find them?
There's kind of a couple different agencies around the area. I live in Michigan, and so there's a couple agencies that book a bunch of the Midwest. And so if you get in with them, you can get in with all their clubs. It's not like in acting. It's not like once you have an agent, they're doing all the work for you. I wish it was that way, but it's not. I mean, I spend a lot of time emailing, calling different bookers, you know, trying to get in to clubs. And then there's certain clubs that are independently booked, you know, like the owner will book them. Like my home club is the Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase, and they just book it internally. So a lot of with those clubs, you're just constantly, like, you know, sending in your DVD, going there to audition, getting in word of mouth. So one of the best ways, I feel like, to get in some of the places is to go with another comic who's already working there, who's maybe a friend of yours, and, you know, they'll take you along with them. But, yeah, there's really a lot of ways to do it, and I feel like that's a big part of it, is you're just constantly trying to get in new places, trying to maintain relationships with some of the bookers and club owners that you have right now. So, but that's basically how I do it.
Right. Any television?
Have I done any television?
Yeah.
Not anything national. I've done really crappy television.
Well, local counts. Look, everybody says, and everybody thinks they're funny. I think I'm funny. People tell me I'm funny. Mm-hmm. But anybody who's done radio or has done professional radio will tell you that, yeah, you could be funny for 15 minutes, but can you do it longer?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the difference between the wannabes and the people who are really doing it. And I think a half an hour standing in front of a club is a long time.
Yeah, well, and it feels different than 15 minutes, too, or even, you know, 10, or 20 minutes, that because it's like, you know, they can laugh and you can get them to laugh consistently, but it's like you have to keep them engaged as well, I feel like, you know. And I feel like when you're getting longer than like 20 minutes, I mean, even with headliners, they do 45 to an hour. I mean, I can't even imagine doing that much time right now, you know, because it does seem like a lot of time to just stand up there and have them, you know, be engaged with what you're saying. So, yeah, but I mean, I feel like that comes with time, you know, like first you start with 5 minutes and then 10 and then 15 and so on and so on.
Why do you do what you do?
Why do I do comedy? You know, I've done a lot of different things. I've worked nonprofit a lot and, you know, done some acting and stuff like that. I think what it is I think that laughter is just so addictive. You know, like the first, I never thought I would ever do comedy in a million years, and I kind of did it as a challenge to myself. And the first time, at the first open mic that I heard a laugh, which is pretty much all I got in that whole 5 minutes, was like one person laughing, but it was, I think I just loved it so much, and there was something about it that was really addictive, you know, and I basically haven't stopped since. And then it's like, you know, you meet other comics and the community. I would say the community of local comics where I live is really great, and there's so many wonderful, funny people in it that it's hard to leave. And it's also, you know, I love to laugh, and if I can make other people laugh and I can laugh at other comics, it's just something that's, it's something that's brought me a lot of happiness and something I think I'll stay in for a while.
Yeah, right on. Amen, sister. It's Vince in the Bay, my guest tonight, Kate Brindle. She's a comedian, and she's with me for the whole program. And if you want to join us, 347-826-7667 is the number. I have a caller here waiting patiently from area code 810. Go ahead. You're on the line with Kate Brindle.
Area
code 810. Yeah, hi. You're on the air. What's up?
Hey, this is Tom Sumner calling. I had Kate on my radio show on Friday. Just called up to say hi. Love what you guys are doing.
Right on. Well, we love you loving us doing this. And is there anything on your mind? Are you familiar with Kate and her work? What can you tell her about your tell us about your experience with Kate and whatnot?
Well, she was performed in Flint this weekend. I didn't get a chance to go out and see her, but I had her on my radio show Friday morning.
Right on.
It was very fun. Thank you for having me again.
What's
so how was the gig?
How was the gig? It was a lot of fun. I was just telling them we had the show on Sunday and it was packed in Flint. Sometimes that room can be a little rowdy, a lot of drunk people,
that's a drinking bunch for sure.
Yes, absolutely. But they were pretty good. They didn't get really drunk till the headliner went on, so they were pretty nice.
That's another advantage to being the opener, I bet, is you don't get the rowdiest of the hecklers.
Oh yeah, because half the time that, you know, with the late show, the headliner won't even get on till like 11 o'clock. You know, and if they've been drinking since 8, they can be a bit challenging, I guess. So, yeah, that's definitely an advantage. Plus, then after you're done, you can go drink yourself if you want, which is kind of cool. Just sit back and watch the headliner and, you know, have a couple beers.
Unless you're somebody like, who's one of my favorite comics is, what's his name, Doug Stanhope.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking
about? Mm-hmm.
He's like, he gets drunk during the show. He just sneaks, he chain smokes and drinks through his whole show. It's insane. That's like part of his shtick.
Yeah, I think that's a good shtick to have, probably. plus dude. I think he's well known enough that he can probably, you know, do that and nobody cares that much.
Once they legalize cannabis for recreational purposes, I'm taking the show on the road. I'm gonna have to do it. Be the first cannabis comic to do it on stage.
Yeah, well, you should come to Michigan. We
although I bet Cheech and Chong have done all that stuff, huh? They ever get
bit.
High on stage?
Does who?
Did Cheech and Chong ever get high on stage before back in the day?
You know, I don't know. I know that. Do you know Doug Benson?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah, I actually worked with him one time.
Cool. What was he like?
really baked a lot, but really, really nice guy. But yeah, he's very, very mellow. I don't think he does it on stage, or at least he didn't when I worked with him. But
I don't. Why wouldn't comics do that? I mean, Cypress Hill fucking does it on stage. Why not a comic?
You know, I think it's probably just with, like, the rules of the actual comedy club. If you're doing theaters or, you know, big...
Yeah, they allow you to get sloshy drunk and potentially turn over tables and get in fights and break lots of glasses, as opposed to the cannabis comedians who, what, might hug you to death?
Exactly, or, like, share a bag of Doritos with you or something.
I don't get down like that.
Shut up, LT. God damn it, LT, you piece of shit. You're such a pansy now.
I don't get down like that.
Well, you should. I was going to tell you, you should come to Michigan. We have medicinal marijuana is legal here now. Of course, it's legal in California, too, right?
Sister, I'm in California. I'm in the fucking Nexus. But I will come out to Michigan, actually. My sister just moved to Midland.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah.
So I'm going to definitely make a trip out there soon. To visit, and hopefully you're doing a gig, because I'd definitely like to see you perform live.
Yeah, that'd be great. Well, and if
oh,
you come,
oh, you know what? You should tell us right now about your upcoming gigs. Like, what do you have lined up in the next couple of weeks?
I am actually I'm going to be in Topeka, Kansas next weekend at Jeremiah Bullfrogs, and then I'm doing for like 2 weeks. I'm going to be out west, like Washington State and Spokane, Montana, Idaho, Oregon, a bunch of states. Well, yeah, some states I've never even been to before. I've never been to Montana or Idaho. So it'll be kind of a first for me, and I'm pretty excited. And the headliner that I'm working with, his name's Steve Sabo. He's absolutely hilarious. He's from Ohio. We've traveled together quite a bit, and he's amazing. I mean, he can sometimes do like an hour and a half show just himself, and the crowds absolutely
wow.
love him. So, yeah, so I think it'll be fun.
I don't know. Winning, anyone?
Yes, we are winning, Chuck. It's Vince in the Bay hanging out with Kate Brendel, taking calls, 347-826-7667. I'm going to take another little brickety break here and be back with Kate in just a second. If you want to join us, the lines are open, and we shall return after this.
listening to a little rap music, because I know it may not look like it, but I'm like a hardcore gangsta biatch, and don't let the outfit from the Gap fool ya. And I heard by far the most touching line in rap music today was by 50 Cent. If you guys know the words, feel free to sing along. Went a little something like this. Girl, I love you like a fat kid loves cake. Aww. Is that not the most romantic thing you've ever heard in your life? Like, all I could think was, God, if only I could get somebody to say such sweet things like that to me. But I was thinking about it, like, honestly, I'm really not that picky. Like, and pretty low standards. Like, I really fell for someone who loved me like a fat kid loved gym class. Desperation, that's my message from my coach.
Me, girl, it's easy to love me now. Would you love me if I was down?
Broadcasting live from the Bay to Bombay, back to the BK and down to LA, it's Mega Show with your host, Vince in the Bay. Call in now, biatches, 347-826-7667. And now, back to Mega Show.
Trying to figure how you got them jeans. If I was down, would you say things to make me smile? I treat you how you want to be treated, just teach me how. If I was with some other chick and someone happened to see, and when you asked me about it, I said it wasn't me. Would you believe me or up and leave me? How deep is our bond if that's all it takes for you to be gone? We only humans, girl, we make mistakes. To make it up, I do whatever it takes. I love you like a fat kid love cake. You know my style, I say anything to make you smile.
Girl, it's easy to love me now. Would you love me if I was down and out? Would you still have love?
Oh yeah.
For me, girl.
R.I.P. Nate Dogg.
Nate Dogg.
Rest in peace. The it seems like I didn't even realize until I heard that joke of yours. I didn't even realize that Nate Dogg collaborated with 50 Cent. I mean, that guy was fucking legendary.
Yeah. Yeah, and wasn't he only like 43 when he passed away?
Yeah. Yeah, he had two strokes when he was like 41.
Oh, wow.
And he hasn't been the same since, and I think they said he died from complications due to that.
Yeah, that's sad. I mean,
but yeah, that 50 Cent, he is a wordsmith, is he not?
He is. He's a very romantic guy, that 50 Cent.
He was struggling to find something to rhyme with whatever it take, and bingo.
There you go. Exactly. He's got some other gems, too.
Oh, I know. I understand. He's very complicated. He's kind of like an onion. You just keep peeling it back layers. It's every time you listen to him, there's something new you learn. It's incredible.
Exactly. I like his song, Have a Baby by Me, and then you'll be a millionaire. I don't know if you know that one.
No, I'm not familiar. Oh, man, he's a genius. I can't even... He's so over my head, I don't even know if I want to try.
Yeah, he's very deep, very deep.
Incredible. It's Vince in the Bay back here with Kate Brindle. She's a comedian, and she is performing on the West Coast, which is cool. You're not coming to California, which sucks.
Yeah.
But you are going to be in Topeka, Kansas next week at Jeremiah Bullfrogs. I love... If anything else, it's worth it to get into comedy just for the names of these different comedy clubs all across random places in the United States.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
The Mineshaft Lounge in Butte, Montana. Yeah, I'm playing at the Shaft in Butte.
yeah, I can hardly
wait to see
what that
Shaft
one is.
Shaft as in like my cock, and Butte
right.
as in butt with an E at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'll keep you posted.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's like some sex club or something that doing open mic night.
That'd be great.
Right, the Purple Onion.
Purple Onion, yeah. Yeah, no, you should play the Purple Onion in San Francisco. It's a nice. That was the first time I'd ever been there. It's a cool little place. It's small.
Do they have guys standing outside with mustaches yelling at you?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's Baltimore. Never mind.
Wow. Well, that sounds interesting, at the very least.
Good Times Pub in Spokane Valley, Washington, and Times is spelled with a Y.
I think so. Yeah, so maybe they use a lot of time.
The Inn on Broadway in Missoula, Montana on the 19th. Red Lion Hotel on in Lewiston, Idaho on the 20th. That's 420. Huge 420 show in Lewiston, Idaho. Are you going to be playing like an Aryan Nation conference or something?
In Lewiston, Idaho, or after that?
At the Red Lion Hotel?
I hope to God not. So I've never been to any of these places before, so it'll be a little
careful
bit...
Careful in Idaho.
Wait a second. There's nice people.
No, Idaho
there.
Is
what
like the capital for white supremacists.
Really?
Do you think Idaho is full of white supremacists?
Yeah. They have. There's a whole town
where...
These
are people of the earth. They pull potatoes out of the ground. What the hell's wrong with you?
I'm not saying everybody in Idaho is a white supremacist. I'm just saying there's a large...
Sounded that way. I mean, if I went to Idaho, would I be a white supremacist? No, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, you would be.
It's possible.
No, if you went to Idaho, you'd be the closest thing they had to a black person, so they probably ostracized you.
Well, if you want to come with me, let me know.
I do.
Sweet. I'll have to find where Lewiston actually is. I've never been there. Never been to Idaho at all. So it'll be an adventure for me, too.
Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think that the audiences have become better or worse over the 6 years you've been performing?
It depends, I think. If it's a venue where they're used to having stand-up, I think that they're really good, you know, and I think that stand-up is more accessible now than it ever has been before, you know, with YouTube and, you know, just a lot of the different Comedy Central shows and stuff like that. So I feel like, you know, a lot of people know what stand-up comedy is and know what it should be. And but then again, if you do some of these bars where they're not used to it and they've never been to a comedy show, and they don't really know how you're supposed to act. They can be a bit challenging. But
sort of like the Blues Brothers showing up at Big Bob's, right?
Right.
Country
right.
Bunker. When you're doing stand-up and whatnot. Is it the fact that you can make people laugh, or is it the fact that you can control the audience that gives you the most satisfaction?
It's probably that I can make them laugh, you know, because I really like to laugh. And so if I can laugh with people and if they appreciate something that I found funny, they think it's funny too, I think that's really satisfying, you know, because you're getting rewarded for the writing that you're doing, you know, but ultimately, it is just kind of about having fun. And so if I can have fun with those people, then that's what I like about it.
Have you studied some of the older comics?
Not as much as I should. I mean, I kind of watch who I like, but I definitely need to watch more.
Well, I mean older comics out of the 50s and the 60s. The ones that got on television and did it live. And...
No, I need to a little bit more. You know, I mean, I've seen like some of the old, well, of course it was past the 60s, like some of the old Dean Martin roasts and stuff like that. But and I've seen like old footage of Joan Rivers. But yeah, I probably could stand to watch more, you know, because, I mean, a lot of those people really did pioneer comedy. And I think anytime, you know, you can study someone who goes in front of a live audience and gets that sort of response, it can be really beneficial.
Well, not only that, they were funny. People like Jonathan Winters and Buddy Hackett. Buddy Hackett could get on television and tell some of the most dirty, raunchiest stories and get it past every censor on the network. I remember watching him on the Tonight Show and laughing my ass off. You can find that stuff on YouTube, too. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's truly the test of, you know, a good joke is if it could stand, you know, stand the test of time. So, yeah, I'll definitely have to check some of that out. I did see Jonathan Winters has this kind of like mockumentary out right now that I actually it's got a bunch of contemporary comedians as well. I actually saw that about a month ago at the movie theater. It was really good because it had a lot of clips of some of his older stuff on television, but then, you know, they interviewed him in the present. And it starts off being kind of like a real documentary, but then it gets... a little bit outlandish and fake. So, but that's really, that was really
good.
Jonathan
Winters must be, what, 80-some, 90 years old by now, right?
Yeah, I think he's in his 80s. I mean, you would never know it. He's super sharp and quick.
I mean, it's sort of like when you see the old interviews of the Three Stooges.
Mm-hmm.
when they get on there and they're 80 years old. It just it kind of puts me off just a little bit because I remember them the way they were, right? I mean, that's
right.
That's timeless comedy too.
Yeah.
And those guys were funny. They mm-hmm. were they were at the top of their game back at that time.
Well, and even to be able to do some of the physical comedy they did, you know, was really impressive. Because
you know who's the best at that physical comedy was W.C. Fields.
Yeah.
And he's hilarious. It's a real dry sense of comedy, which is what I like. I like a good dry sense of humor.
I'm a big Stephen Wright fan.
Are you? I like him.
Stephen
too.
Wright. I like Bill Hicks. I like Doug Stanhope, I said. Yeah, and I'm keeping an open mind about new people, too. There's so many out there, it's ridiculous. I was wondering, Kate, of all the comics you've experienced in your time touring and playing and performing all over, the ones that... Who's somebody that stands out, somebody that you've encountered in your travels and seen live or performed on the same... Maybe not necessarily performed on the same stage with, but you've seen them do their thing live. Who's impressed you the most over the years?
I really like there's a comedian, she's out of Canada actually. Her name's Elvira Kurt. I don't know if you know her.
Never heard of her.
I think a lot. She's had a Comedy Central present special. She's had a lot more success, I think, in Canada than she has in this country. But she was great to me. Like, she has so much energy, and she talks a lot about these just little everyday kind of things. A lot about her childhood. And she just makes it, you know, these little things so funny that you wouldn't even, you know, necessarily give two thoughts to, you know. She's mm-hmm. also one of the nicest people I've worked with and just really, really encouraging. And I worked with her a couple times, and every time I just had such a great experience. But she was also one of these people, too. She was very humble, you know, and even though she was getting, like, standing ovations at the club where I worked with her, she was still, like, you know, coming back to the green room after every show just saying, like, well, I could have done this better or I could have done that better, you know. So I think that she had, you know, she had this quality about her that she always wanted to improve as well. So I would definitely recommend her to people.
Right on. I've never heard of her, and I just Googled her really quick, and, yeah, her Comedy Central special popped up. So I'm going to check that out for sure. If you want to join myself and, Kate's here too, Kate Brindle. She's a comedian, and she is going to be appearing April 9th, 8th and 9th at Jeremiah Bullfrogs in Topeka, Kansas, and also April 17th at Good Times Pub in Spokane Valley, Washington, and there's also a number of other dates coming up that she's doing this month. You can, of course, check that all out at her website. Her website is katebrindle.com. That's KateBrindle.com. And I'm Vincent DeBay. And we're going to take more calls in just a second. Give us a ring-a-ding on the horn, 347-826-7667. I'll be right back after this word from Wallpaper.
You wanna go to a party tonight? It's supposed to be the jam, it's supposed to be really nice. We'll take the bus or a taxi cab. We can get paid and then go to the club. I said, whoa, 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 yeah. Started off with a glass of red wine, cheap champagne. It tickles down. I gotta say I'm looking good.
doing stand-up comedy because I've gotten to meet a lot of really cool people doing comedy. A couple of weird ones, though. Like, I was doing the show not too long ago. After the show, there's this short guy comes walking right up to me, and he's like, "Hey, you're a tall drink of water." Okay. Like, what do you say back to that? Like, "Ooh, thanks. You're a short little juice box." "Want to squeeze you? Can you little Capri Sun?"
Broadcasting live from the Bay to Bombay, back to the BK and down to LA, it's Mega Show with your host, Vince in the Bay. Call in now, biatches, 347-826-7667. And now, back to Mega Show.
Hey, it's Vince in the Bay back with my guest, Kate Brindle, and we also have the One Angry Jew sitting in with us. About 40 minutes to go here, 40 minutes to take calls. If you want to join us, the number, of course, 347-826-7667. And also, big shouts out to all of the archive listeners. Thank you very much for tuning in. I do get a majority of listeners for each show via the podcast and archives. You can download my show on iTunes. You just go to my show page and there's a little button in there somewhere. It's hidden, of course. But if you just go you open up one of my shows and next to the player, there's a little icon for iTunes. You just click on that, and you can subscribe to it. This is a podcast. Anyhoot, I'm here with Kate Brindle, and Kate, I follow you on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I also follow Bree Olson on Twitter, and I've been following Bree Olson way before she was a goddess.
Me too.
I'm a huge fan of her work. In fact, I would say I'm a bigger fan of her work than Charlie Sheen's.
Oh, agreed. Yes.
I mean, and that's saying a lot because Charlie Sheen was in one of my all-time favorite movies, Platoon, and it won a fucking Oscar. So that's saying a lot. But, of course, Platoon can't hold a candle to Anal Reamer 7. That Brie Olsen is a performer. You want to talk about a tiger blood or whatever. She is a tiger in the sack.
She's amazing. She's a tigress, yeah. Didn't she win Best Starlet or something like that a couple years ago?
Oh, Ultimate Starlet. She was Best Newcomer. She was Best Newcomer, I think, that's CUMMER, a couple of years ago, I believe.
Yeah, well, who needs an Oscar when you can be that, you know?
Dude. So I noticed that, I don't even know if she's vegan or vegetarian, but I noticed that on Twitter, you tweeted her, you said, if you'd like, this is Kate to Bree Olson, she says, "If you'd like recommendations for vegan restaurants in Detroit, give me a shout. Welcome to Michigan."
Yes.
You're like the welcoming committee. It's great. You're like the hospitality, the local hospitality person that comes out and holds the red carpet out for all the celebrities. That's a valuable service.
Where do you suppose she's going to find a nice vegan restaurant in Idaho?
I don't know. Oh, where am I going to find one?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to find one.
I'll
tell you where you can find some ammunition, though.
Yeah.
No, hold on a second. Are you vegan like Jews or like Hasidic or whatnot, where you know they won't eat off of the plates where meat was or anything like that?
I'm fairly strict. You know, I mean, I'll go to dinner if people have meat, but yeah, I probably wouldn't eat. I wouldn't like pick pepperoni off of a pizza. I would want like my own pizza without cheese. So yeah.
Right, but would you eat a salad off of a plate that might have held a steak at one time?
I don't know. Is there still steak juice on it? If there's like steak.
No, it would be a clean plate.
Oh, okay. Then yeah, that's fine.
I mean, they got people
that was
clean
that was sopped up with a dirty napkin.
No, I'm just concerned that you may not be able to eat. If I didn't know how deep these convictions went.
Oh yeah, I can.
Oh, they go very deep for some people, Jew. You don't even.
Stop.
I don't think you even
want
to
stop it. I want to hear the answer.
Yeah, I can eat off the same dishes. I'm not that strict. But,
all right. Good. Well, that proves you're not Jewish too. What is it with the no East Coast engagements?
You know, I don't know. I would love to go to the East Coast. It's just the Midwest, surprisingly enough, we have a lot of comedy here. So it's pretty easy to stick around these parts. And then I've never been to some of the states out west, so I figured, you know, why not take the chance to do it? But, I've got a couple of things coming up in Virginia this summer, Virginia and North Carolina. I don't know if I put them on my website yet, but... yeah, I'd love to do some stuff in New York, and I work a club in Pennsylvania as well. I just haven't been there this year, but I'll go wherever they have me.
Which club is that?
It's called Stitches, and it's in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Well, that's not too far.
So yeah, it's in the heart of Amish country.
2 hours later, you could have been in Philadelphia.
I think they have a pretty nice club there. I've never been to it though.
In Philadelphia, there's several clubs.
Yeah, I've never been to.
Hey, Jew, why don't you stop asking questions and fucking book her on at a club in Philly?
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I have the connections. That's good.
Dude, you could easily do that. That's all it takes. All you have to do is get somebody to call for you and just pretend to be your agent or something.
Do you think that works?
Yeah. That could work. You could pretend, you know.
Do you so how long did it take for you to acquire representation and somebody that was able to help you book shows on a regular basis?
Let's see. The first agency I really worked for was an agency called Funny Business. They book stuff all over the country, but a lot in the Midwest. Probably about a year of doing it and making a lot of phone calls for them and, you know, having other comics vouch for me is how long.
So is it you initially pursuing them, or is it them eventually recognizing you and pursuing you?
It's mostly you pursue them first. Occasionally I'll get people who see things and, you know, they want me to come do a show, but, you know, there's so many comics that are always hitting up these bookers for work, so a lot of times it's like you go to them, you know,
right.
Or at least in the beginning.
Oh, I was mesmerized at this last comedy thing, the purple onion. Can't even say it
again.
I smoke
with
this
purple
it, but I can't
onion crap enough with that. Is that the only place?
No, but that's what I'm saying. Is there's these complete nobodies that you know they were, some of them were, two of them were kind of funny. They were all right. I was feeling them. But the thing that I noticed with the undercard comics or whatever was that some of them seemed very I don't know what the right word is, but just sort of too self-aware or something, or maybe like too eager to please the audience or me. I just happened to be sitting right in the front. Like somehow I ended up like stayed front and center. And so like the comics were looking like right at me, and almost every comic like had to say something to me. And I'm kind of a blank expressionless person to begin with. I'm pretty, you know, reserved and just deadpan, and so I guess they didn't feel like they were getting enough of a rise out of me. So at some point, almost every comic had to like comment about how I was such a tough nut to crack or whatever. And it was kind of like, it felt like, first of all, it made me feel uncomfortable because I was like, hey, I came here to just hear you tell jokes. I didn't come here for you to like pull me into your act or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I also felt like it was kind of, you know, almost a nervous thing on their part, where like they felt like they were so eager to please, but yet weren't getting the reaction that they wanted to get, and then they were like sort of externalizing it.
Yeah,
I think Philadelphia needs you. I'm looking through the city paper right now, and roller derby is back.
Yeah.
All right, whatever. Kate, follow up my statement. What do you think?
Yeah, I do think that a lot of times, you know, comics just want that validation, and that, you know, if everyone in the crowd is laughing and then one person's kind of staring at you, you automatically focus on that one person. you know. And I think that a lot of the opening acts, they do. They, you know, because it's kind of your job to get everyone into it and to kind of warm up the crowd for the headliner. So I think that a lot of them will try to engage each table, you know, especially if it's kind of a smaller, more intimate space. You know, I was working at a club this weekend that was pretty small, the Friday and Saturday shows, and yeah, and I would just go table to table and ask them where they're from and what they do and stuff like that. And it was funny because there was this one woman who, well, come to find out, she was just really drunk and about to pass out, but she was just staring at me and she wouldn't laugh, and I was just fixated on her. I couldn't take my eyes off of her. So I think there's, you know, I think it's a combination of needing to be validated by everyone, but then also wanting to make sure that everyone's having fun and that the crowd's sufficiently warmed up by the time the headliner gets on there.
Yeah, I was really pissed at the party that I was with for choosing the seats they did, because, like, I much rather would have just been chilling in the back, just taking it all in. And yeah, so lesson learned. And it was a small, empty club. It was like half filled. And, you know, of course, at any venue, people, when they have a choice, they always kind of stay in the fringes and don't fill in the center, especially if it's, you know, kind of half empty. Mm-hmm. So I was just a sitting target in the middle of this whole fucking deal.
Yeah, it's a good one.
All right, let's take a call here, shall we? I think this might be 50 rubles. You know how we were talking about 50 cent. I have a regular on my show, a good friend of mine, he's 50 rubles.
That's great.
And he's sort of my cooking correspondent, and every once in a while he checks in, and I find out what he's cooking. So I think this is him. Let me see. Hey, 50 rubles, what's cooking?
Oh, nothing. What's happening on the show tonight?
Well, tonight my special guest is Kate Brindle. She's a comedian and based out of Michigan.
Oh, yeah? Say something funny.
Quick, Kate. Say something funny.
No pressure.
Quick.
I can tell you like a little joke, but they're
yeah,
really
tell us a little joke.
The little joke. Okay. Do you want one? They're so corny. Do you want it still?
Please.
Knock
I want it. I want it, baby. Give it to me.
Here, you might be disappointed, but here you go. Did you hear about the dyslexic devil worshipper?
No.
No.
He sold his soul to Santa.
That's pretty funny. Did you make that one up?
I might be disappointed. I don't know a lot of one-liners. All the one-liners I know are really corny.
Do you know that Santa's favorite band?
No. What is it?
Santana.
Ah, very nice.
Yeah, that's funny.
Right. Yeah, 50 rubles is a sharp, sharp guy. Let me tell you. He's worth at least 55 rubles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody give me
that
heart attack
earlier. Other than the wall-to-wall comedy hour here.
Well, other than that, it's the One Angry Jew's been hanging out and helping me grill Kate about comedy. And we had some dude call in. Who was that guy that called in that said you were on his show earlier? What was his name again?
Yeah, his name's Tom, and he's in Flint, Michigan, and he has a station, or he has a show, one of the college radio stations, and I actually
right on.
Did a show on Friday. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome. I felt bad. He was kind of there and then gone for a second. And I wanted to give him a chance to sort of plug his show, because I'm all about spreading the love. So, but it was cool for him to pop in, and maybe I'll track him down on the internet and check out his show, because I'm sure nowadays, especially if you're, you know, already a terrestrial radio station to begin with, they've obviously probably got an online presence as well.
Yeah, they do. So, I can give it a quick plug if you want it.
Oh, do it. Do it then.
It's his show is called Off the Cuff, and the radio station is WKUF 94.3, and it's based in Flint, Michigan, but you can listen online. You can stream it.
Awesome. Have you ever met Michael Moore?
No, I have not. I've seen him speak. What's that?
I said that's too bad.
Yeah, have you met him before?
No. I like his movies, though. I love his movies. But he's from Flint, isn't he?
He is from Flint, yeah. And he came back to Michigan, where I went to grad school, actually. He came to the school, and I heard him speak. This was maybe like 5 years ago now. But he was great. Yeah, I'm a big fan of his. I would love to meet him.
Yeah. I have mixed emotions about him. I love his movies, and I think he's funny, and he does a really good job with his movies. But I think when he tries to get too preachy, that's when he loses me. I don't think he's that sharp of an intellect to really be somebody that I should be getting any sort of social or moral, setting my social or moral compass, you know, gauging it on. But that's just me. I think he's funny. I think he's hilarious. I think he should. It's like I feel the same way about him. I feel about Bill Maher and all these other people that try to. They're really comedians, but they try to ride that line of being like some sort of legitimate social and political pundit, and right. That bothers me. It's like Bono, you know, telling you who you should vote for or something. It's like, no, just, you know, play your music, and, you know, I'll think for myself on that one. Thanks.
Right.
That's just me, though.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I mean, I think what Michael Moore does a good job of is that, you know, like you say, his movies, they present a lot of the information and then allow people to make their own conclusions. So I do think he does a very good job, you know, with presenting information about different issues. You know, I thought his movie, what did I see most recently, Sicko, I thought that was really well done. But yeah, it's good. You know, I mean, he interviews different people in different healthcare systems. But ultimately, I think he lets the audience make their own conclusion, which I think is important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Although I've read some reports where some of the Cubans themselves were complaining about that movie because they felt that it showed an unfair picture of what not a very true portrait of what the healthcare system is like there. That he got preferential treatment and that regular commoners wouldn't have gotten exposure to what he had gotten, and the fact that he was carrying, you know, having a huge television crew or whatever film crew following him around as a major PR stunt. I'm judging this without seeing it, which is very unfair to Michael Moore, but I have heard people complain about that being a problem where, like, you know, he obviously went to the you know, the best of the best.
Yeah.
I've talked to people that have relatives in Cuba and lived in Cuba and have gone back there recently to visit and hang out. And she said that it's not all that great. It didn't sound all that great to me. Like, the pictures looked beautiful. Like, everything is very patina and all, you know, the colors are very vibrant and saturated, and it's just a very beautiful land. But the people are just kind of like standing around and doing nothing. They just smoke all day and talk. And that's in a nutshell communism for you.
Wow.
Everybody's equally miserable, poor, and just sit around and talk all day. Kind of like my radio show.
Yeah, I was going to say, I could. That's kind of like my life right now, too, so I can maybe get used to that.
Yeah, but no, I hear you. Michael Moore is funny. He's a talent, and yeah. Big ups to Flint, Michigan. I've actually had met a lot of people from Michigan in California. San Francisco seems to be a hotbed for Michigan refugees.
Mm-hmm.
I want to call them. I've met so many people over the last, I'd say 10 years that have relocated here from Michigan. And it's quite amazing. And they're all really weird, fucked up people.
Yeah. It might be something to do with the winters. It's pretty gray here, you know.
Yeah.
So you can kind of get in your own head a lot. But, yeah, we're really, you know, it's sad because I like Michigan a lot. I keep moving back here. And I've lived in a few different states, but people are leaving because we don't have any jobs, you know. So because when I used to live in Virginia, I met people from Michigan all the time, and it was same thing. It was because they couldn't find jobs here, and so, you know, they moved somewhere else, and, you know, it's too bad because I do think it's a nice place here.
Yeah.
Like, not in the winter.
And then
so much, but
the movie industry there got hit really hard recently where they cut off a certain tax break that they were offering productions.
Yeah,
and
they're
now,
threatening to, yeah.
Because I know the Avengers were supposed to be shot. It was supposed to be shot in Detroit, and they at the last minute switched to Cleveland.
Oh, okay.
And I think it had to do with some sort of tax incentive deal that got nixed. And so people, and like I have a friend who works in that industry, and he was having such a hard time finding work in San Francisco. He was flying back to Michigan to work because he's from there originally. And he was able to find so much work working on movies out there for a while for, I think it was all of last summer maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like the money train. And he would work there for a couple of months and then come out here and just not work at all, but be fine because he grinded for so long. And then he was getting ready to go back out there again. And then I guess some law or something passed. And that made a lot of these productions flee, like, overnight. It's crazy how that works.
Yeah, because, I mean, there were a lot of productions. Because, on the off days, I used to do a bunch of extra work, and seemed like there was always something filming. But, yeah, we got a new governor, and he was threatening to do a lot of cuts in the budget and take away some of the tax incentives. So, I think a lot of movies are afraid to come here anymore, which is unfortunate because it does make a lot of jobs. And, for a lot of people like me that work at night, it's kind of fun to just be an extra all day,
That's that. I want to get into that. I think that'd be hilarious.
Yeah, you should. It's really easy. It's really boring, actually. I mean, it's fun, but there's just a ton of downtime. But there's free food, which is amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've worked on productions as a sound engineer, and it'd be nice to, for once, instead of be running around and stuff on set all the time, and I'm used to the downtime because usually the sound department is ready before the camera and lighting, so I'm used to the downtime and just dealing with that, but not having to set up any equipment at all and just showing up and putting on some clothes that they give me, or maybe not even doing that. Just showing up and sitting in the bleachers, pretending like I'm at a game. Hell, why not?
Yeah, and get paid to do it.
I pretend I'm enjoying baseball games when I go to them for real anyway, so I might as well get paid for it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, it's very easy, And yeah, I did one. What was it? It's called Real Steel. It's with Hugh Jackman. I did it last summer. Same thing. We had to pretend that we were at a robot boxing match. Just get super excited and scream like crazy, and they fed us and gave us money, and my lungs got to work out. It was fun.
Hey, have you ever tried to do Last Comic Standing?
I have not. I've had several friends that have tried to do it, and I actually, the woman that won a few years back, Eliza Schlesinger, I don't know if you know her.
The Blondie. I know her. I met her. I worked with her.
Oh, you did? Yeah.
Because I worked on that season. The Blondie, right? The short little Blondie?
Yeah, real cute.
Yeah. I worked on the episode that they shot in San Francisco.
Oh,
I was
okay.
on the crew for that. I was one of the sound guys on that. And so I followed around a bunch of the contestants. And this was really interesting to me. I'm probably not really blowing anybody's mind or giving anything away, but I thought it was interesting working on that show, how, I got there at 5 a.m. or whatever at the call call time, and there was already a line around the block of people waiting to get their shot on the show, to audition for the show. And it was kind of sad, actually, because later, once I got rigged up and going, found out that there are people that get a chance, like 20 seconds in front of some talent scouts or whatever, but none of those people make it to the actual show because they fly in ringers from all over the place, aspiring comics, people working comics, people that I've since seen on Comedy Central, Reno 911 and other series like that. And they're just working actors, writers, comedy writers, comedians, actors. And what they had us do is do little specials on each of the contestants. So, like, I haven't even seen the show. But apparently what they do is they, you know, they perform their little bit and they get judged live, and they do these little packages beforehand that I was a part of, where we were recording them just kind of in an alleyway talking about shit, and then we'd shoot like some B-roll with them, and but we'd interview them in some sort of scenario and give some sort of backstory from them. And I was on the crew that interviewed her. We followed her around and like interviewed her a bunch of times, and I didn't even realize that she won until like a year later, when I was like thinking like, hey, I wonder whoever won that show. And I looked it up on the internet. I was like, oh my God, that little fucking blondie won.
Yeah.
And she was already a working actress. She was a comedy writer. I don't know who she wrote for, but you know, all these people were all seasoned pros. None of them were off the street. I'm sure they showed plenty of B-roll of the poor kids, you know, shivering in the cold at 6 a.m. waiting around the block to get in to get their shot, like American Idol style. But that ain't how it works.
Right. Well, and that's interesting you say that, because I was at the Detroit Comedy Festival all week this past week, and we were talking about it. And there were a couple of people there that had done the show, and they were pretty much saying that, yeah, most of the people that even make it on the show, they actually have audition times, and that if you don't have an audition time, you might as well not even bother standing in the line. Because
oh, absolutely. Yeah, I worked on, I'd say, like five or there was probably grand total, like 25, I think, ringers, as I called them at the time.
Uh-huh.
That were on the show, and they were from all over the West Coast. They weren't all from San Francisco. They were at the San Francisco show, the episode or whatever, but most of them, like that chick, she was from L.A. The chick that won was from L.A.
Yeah.
Most of the people were from L.A., but there was one guy that was from Seattle. There's another guy from Sacramento, somebody. So, you know, they seemed to be more or less West Coast, but there was even a guy from, like, Maryland who flew all the way out from Maryland. You know,
yeah.
He had nothing to do with San Francisco whatsoever. And you know, and then they staged these, you know, them on their phone, you know, calling their mom or whoever and telling them, hey, I advanced to Las Vegas or wherever the fuck it was, and acting all excited and stuff. And it's just like, okay, you know, you guys knew you were more or less going already.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
They did have a couple local comedians, though. But the people that they had were... They had this group. It was like three brothers, and I thought that was kind of like cheating. I was like, wait, can you have more than one? Has anybody advanced on that show with like a duo or a trio?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know that they ever got very far if they did.
Like there's this other couple, like they played themselves off like they were a married couple, but they were like sort of these wannabe Hollywood socialites, you know, that were sort of like these disaffected yuppies.
Mm-hmm.
And but it was more of it wasn't stand-up. It was just kind of like a, you know, it was just a comedy bit, sort of. It was just like they were, you know, playing characters. And they were hilarious fucking characters. Like, I was, like, crying. I could barely, because I was the sound guy, and I was holding the boom, and I was just, like, trying not to pee my pants and wiggle the mic too hard, because they were so fucking hilarious. But it wasn't stand-up, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's interesting, is, like, stand-up is so much more than just being a character up there.
Well,
or just telling a joke, or just telling, like, a one-liner. It's so much more than that. It's like it's like storytelling, in a way, like funny spoken word or something.
Right. Well, I think, yeah, well, in the writing format, I think, is so specific, you know, because, I mean, like you say, you can be funny doing a character or even improv to a certain degree, but I feel like there's a real specific formula for stand-up in order to make it work. But, yeah, I'm not sure if that show is coming back or not. Do you know if it's coming back?
I have no idea. That was weird, because I think that episode I worked on was, like, the first one that they had done in a couple of years. Like, I remember it being, you know, a new episode, but after lacking for a couple of years. And I think it's one of those things that, like, doesn't get good ratings, but then... Once it gets taken off the air, people start complaining that it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes back, and then the ratings suck, and then people complain that it's not there. And I don't know. It's weird.
Well, I think people love that whole idea of like the American Idol, or, you know, just your everyday person, you know, getting discovered off the street. But like you say, they don't understand it's not everyday people. Like the people that win pretty much already have careers in comedy. Like one of the guys that won, John Heffron, is actually from Michigan. I mean, he, you know, has since moved to LA, but I mean, he already had a career. Like he was on air as a radio DJ. I think he might have even had a Comedy Central Presents special. Like, you know, these people, they're professionals. You know, they're not just these randoms who get discovered.
Absolutely. Sorry, folks, if we're blowing your mind tonight. The fourth wall has been exposed or dropped or whatever it is. Right here on the Vince in the Bay show, I am with my special guest tonight, Kate Brindle. She is a comedian, and she has been gracious in hanging out with me this evening for the entire show. I think it's awesome that you've hung out with me this long, Kate, and I appreciate it. And we're going to wrap things up here in just a moment. I'm going to take a break. If you want to join us, there's still time to take your calls, 347-826-7667. It's Vince in the Bay.
Massage, and I don't know if you guys have ever done this or not, but it's a little weird because you have to get like completely naked in front of a total stranger, and the whole time I'm just like, God, this is so awkward. Because I mean, normally there's like alcohol and Craigslist involved in this whole transaction, and I'm the one getting paid.
Broadcasting live from the Bay to Bombay, back to the BK and down to LA, it's Mega Show with your host, Vince in the Bay. Give us a call, bitches. 347-826-7667. And now, back to Mega Show.
Vince in the Bay, back here getting ready to wind things up with Kate Brindle, who's been my distinguished guest for the evening. And we've got a little bit of time here if you want to join us. 347-826-7667. Kate is going to again be appearing April 8th and 9th at Jeremiah Bullfrogs in Topeka, Kansas. April 17th at Good Times Pub in Spokane, Washington. April 19th at the Inn on Broadway in Missoula, Montana. April 20th at the Red Lion Hotel in Lewiston, Idaho. Watch out for the white supremacists, Kate. And that's 420 as well, so they'll probably be stoned too. April 21st at the Mineshaft Lounge in Butte, Montana. April 22nd at Billings Hotel and Convention Center in Billings, Montana. April 27th, that's my birthday, at the Mill Casino in North Bend, Oregon. And that's actually the closest you're probably going to get to me here in California. I think North Bend, that's... And then Winnemucca, Nevada. I've never heard of Winnemucca, Nevada. But April 28th, she'll be at Winnemucca. I can't even fucking say it. That's a tongue twister. Oh, speaking of tongue twisters, maybe I can get Kate to do a tongue twister real quick. Kate, we have a segment here on the program called Tongue Twisters, and you as my distinguished guests are going to be subjected to it right now, whether you like it or not. I do this with all my guests. The Jew's done this. Everybody's done this. And most people get it. And you being a performer and comedian, I'm sure you'll have no problem with it.
Well, I look forward to the challenge.
All right. Sweet. Perfect. All right. Let me dial this in, and you'll get an idea of what it's all about.
Okay.
So here, this gives you a little idea of what it's all about. Here's Tongue Twisters, kids.
It's time for Tongue Twisters with Vince in the Bay. Now say red leather, yellow leather 5 times fast.
Red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather. Red leather, yellow leather, 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 red leather. Okay, for real, here we go. Okay. Red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather. Red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather.
Rubber baby buggy bumpers.
Rubber baby buggy bumpers.
Fat frogs flying past fast.
Fat frogs flying past fast. Fat frogs flying past fast.
She sells seashells by the seashore.
She sells seashells by the seashore.
Say toy boat 5 times fast.
Toy boat, toy boat, toy boat. Toy boat, 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 toy boat. Alright.
I scream, you scream, we all scream for ice cream.
I scream, you scream, we all scream for ice cream.
Shirley shall see the sunshine soon.
Shirley shall see the sunshine soon.
Losers winning. Bye-bye.
All right. Kate, I think you understand the general idea here. You're going to get 3 shots at 3 different tongue twisters. And let's see what you're calling in. We got to first of all figure out what you're playing for tonight, since you're calling in from Michigan. Feedback party going on here in the studio. Hang on. All right, Michigan, and you're in where are you located? You're you say Flint?
No, I'm outside of Ann Arbor, Michigan.
All right, Ann Arbor. That's good. We'll go with Ann Arbor. Let's see, Michigan and Ann Arbor. All right, here we go. Let's see what Kate is playing for tonight. Tonight, Kate, you're playing for a toilet.
Oh,
that's right. Detached and ready to go. Newer, and it's a brand new toilet seat. It's not just the seat. It's the whole thing. You're playing for a toilet, literally.
Wow.
It's courtesy of the folks over at, well, actually, they posted this anonymously on Craigslist, but whatever. Okay. Here we go. We got to do this quick because we're winding down the program, but it'll be quick.
I'm going to take a drink
twister.
Of water in preparation.
What's that?
I was just going to have water in preparation.
Yes,
I'm good.
Yes. Okay.
Good.
All right. All right. Let's start off. The first one is usually pretty easy. Get the ball rolling. All right. Tongue twister number one.
Please, Paul, pause for applause.
Go now?
Yeah.
Please, Paul, pause for applause.
Correct. Okay, here's tongue twister number two.
Lovely lilacs lure Lee to Lonely Lane.
Lovely lilacs lure Lee to Lonely Lane.
Correct. You're good at this. All right. One more to go. You haven't gotten anything wrong yet, so you're doing good. You get three shots at this one. This one's tough. Here it is.
This is for the toilet. Okay.
This is for the toilet. Yes, this is for the toilet. Exactly. All right. Tongue twister number three.
Any noise annoys an oyster, but a noisy noise annoys an oyster most.
Oh, man. All right. Any noise annoys an oyster, but no noise annoys an oyster most.
Here, listen to it again.
Okay.
Oh, where is it? Hang on, I lost it. The oyster one, right?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Tongue twister number three.
Any noise annoys an oyster, but a noisy noise annoys an oyster most.
Okay. Any noise annoys an oyster, but a noisy noise annoys an oyster most.
Judges, she stumbled on that. Did she get it? Correct,
yay.
You got it. All right, Kate, you won it. The toilet is yours. You have to pick it up. Where do you pick it up at? It doesn't say. It just says newer float. What does that mean? Newer float?
Ooh.
Does that mean the little deodorant thing that floats in there is new?
I hope so. I hope that's what it means.
Yeah, that should be like a standard. Anybody that sells a brand new toilet should have a new floater in there.
Yeah, well,
I hope that's what they mean, and not a floater, like, you know, like Caddyshack style.
A recent floater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Kate. Well, we're gonna wrap it up here. Thanks a lot so much for. I really appreciate you coming out and hanging out for the whole program. It was really fun to have you on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Awesome. Anything you want to plug really quick before we get out of here?
Just if people want to read my blog or want more information, they can go to my website, which is just katebrindle.com.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Will do. Well, I appreciate having you on the show, and would love to have you back again in the future, especially if you ever make it out to California.
Yeah, that would be great. Well, thank you again for having me.
You're welcome. And, give us your can people follow you on Twitter, or are you exclusive, or how does that work?
No, I'm a total whore for friends and followers. So twitter.com/Kate Brindle.
Right on.
Yeah.
There it is, Kate Brindle. Appreciate it. And I'm Vincent the Bay, signing off again on another mega show. It's been fantastic hanging out tonight with Kate, and I look forward to hearing from her again soon and hopefully checking her out. If you're in any of the areas that she is performing, do yourself a favor and see her. She's awesome, and she's cute and funny, and she loves animals. And if you love animals too, you should check her out. And also check me out. I'm Vincent the Bay. I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/Vincent the Bay. You can also check me out on my blog. I have a blog. It's vincentthebay.blogspot.com. And I have a new YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/Vince in the Bay. And until next time, adios, amigos. Peace out.
Can't process it. Losers winning.